Oh, you hear about the Christians wouldn't worship Caesar. That was a very nominal deal. This was sort of like I pledge allegiance to the American flag. It was a perfunctory thing. It was only technically worship. Christianity's real contenders were Mithraism, the cult of Attis and Cybele, the cult of the Great Mother, which I think Christianity finally whipped by glorifying Mary. They took the Great Mother over. And if you want to read about this, Angus is one of the best authorities. He's a good old Presbyterian from Australia. He's written two books, The Religious Quest of the Greco-Roman World. Another one is The Mystery Religions of and Christianity. And as he points out, the Christians wrote the histories. But they have dug up Mithraic temples where the worshippers were slaughtered in the pews by the militant Christians.
What's the title of that Mithraism book?
There are two of them. Religious Quest of the Greco-Roman World. The second one is The Mystery Religions and Christianity. Angus is the author of both.
Can you get them in the Adelaide Library?
I wouldn't know. I just wouldn't know. And Christianity. I don't know what the future holds. Paul here had his counterpart in Simon Peter. You remember they had a few weeks training and old Peter, enthusiastic salesman that he was, came in to Jesus and said, "Master, let's stop the education and go out and take the kingdom today." You know? All right. Jesus didn't kill off his enthusiasm. And Peter's enthusiasm was a factor in Peter's success. But the fact remains, they didn't take the kingdom then, did they? It took a while.
Yeah, was, do you think that the Midwares or the Seraphim might be a little wiser than us people and have timed this thing to only action at this time, that the conditions in society today are ripe for intervention?
I think they are in the terms of seed corn. I think there's got to be a lot of work done. Here. How in the devil can you train teachers until you've got this?
Right.
All right, we haven't got teachers trained yet, though. But we couldn't even start to train them until we got the book.
Bill, don't you think an awfully valuable thing for teachers would be to know the possible lessons from history?
Sure.
The historical background.
Why, sure. I think
in the school.
I think we ought to know a little history.
Well, I do.
You know? I once made a lot of money for my company because I knew some history. I knew some human nature. And when Hitler went into Czechoslovakia, I said, this is an exact parallel of when Napoleon went into North Italy. And the mud has hit the fan. It's going to be a major war. We'll be in it. And human nature is not yet civilized enough ever to pay back the same dollars which we borrow for war purposes. So we're going into inflation. And I sold my company and I went down to the Chase National Bank in New York and sold their trust department. And we put one-third of Standard Oil Company's pension money in common stocks at pre-war prices. I'm no economist, but I know history and I know human nature. And I could see an exact parallel. When Napoleon smashed up North Italy, they had to smash Napoleon. When Hitler moved into Czechoslovakia, this was an act of force. Every other move prior to that time had been negotiated. But my heart was troubled when I would listen to people say, you know, who wants to die for dear old Pansy? This was a Midwest isolationist wisecrack. And these people did not know where Danzig was or why. I think we ought to study the history of Christianity. How did it come to be? The papers give us some very important clues. Plain, unvarnished history gives us important clues. In the process of evolving, it certainly ceased to be the gospel of the kingdom of heaven. It became what we now know. It took on a terrific dose of paganism. It took on the organization of the Roman Empire. Bishops were the most important official in each city. A metropolitan, that's the old title, archbishop we're more familiar with, was the exact parallel of a Roman provincial governor. In larger areas, they had what they called primates, who presided at a national conclave. The title persists in the title of Canterbury, primate of all England. York presides at the conclaves of the northern bishops. The early church modeled itself in the West on the Roman Empire, and its structure survived the fall of Rome. But it didn't come in a hurry, did it? It came slowly. It had many struggles. And I think there's a parallel. We have the book now, I think, because we needed to train teachers. We have the book now because we need the book to interest people of means in the financing of translations. How are you going to get some Joe to put up the money to translate it if you haven't got it in English to show him, you know? I think the Urantia movement is warming up in the bullpen. I do not believe we're on the pitcher's mound. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do everything we can warming up in the bullpen. I do not believe that the fields are white unto the harvest. This is not harvest time. This is seed corn accumulation time. I think we've got to plant seed corn and harvest and accumulate more seed corn and harvest and accumulate more seed corn. And one of these days, we'll have us a head of steam up. I don't think Fred and Paul and I will be around. I don't think Patsy will be around. Oh, Lord, no. I don't think her kids will be around. Now, maybe her grandchildren will see this if they live to a good ripe old age. But that doesn't mean that we won't taste some success along the way. Confound it. I remember the day this book was published, and I mailed one to Fred. I promised to. And I wrote him a letter, and the last sentence in that letter, I think, was, "Isn't this a happy day?" We planned this a year ago, and we pretty well accomplished our plan. We couldn't do this if we didn't have the book. We are making progress. I don't believe in sitting on my hands. And Paul, have at it. Have at it. What do you folks think about this? Thank you. I don't know where else to look except to the past for experience. I can't look ahead.
Learn by mistake.
Sir?
I said we learn by mistake.
Right. But let's not repeat the mistakes that we can learn about. Let's learn vicariously.
Let's learn by our own mistakes.
Exactly. I hope to goodness when we get over on the mansion worlds and we get to, you know, there'll be maybe a blue, you still got it, I'll be darned. Look at that, I haven't seen that. I'll be darned. Gosh, I'm glad I had the firm buy all that post postage. And he should pay for it personally.
18 hours after his mail is on the front porch. With a special delivery message.
I'm hopeful that when they essay the results of the efforts of us folks and sum them up, wherever they sum them up, I think it would be wonderful if the concluding statement in their summary might read something like this. These people made new and original mistakes. These were bound to make, but confound it, shame on us if we repeat the mistakes of the past.
Yeah, don't you think that the space age is going to upset the apple cart with some of these fundamentalists?
Oh, dear. I don't know, Fred.
To turn away from the old church. And
you can shut out an awful lot with conviction. You can shut out an awful lot if your convictions are strong enough. And please remember, people that are a little bit worried about their religion are real rigid. They won't debate it in any way, shape, or form. They're the most rigid of all. I've got so much confidence in God that I don't think you have to have the Urantia. I just don't have any feeling that I got to snatch brands from the burning. I even think Jehovah's Witnesses are going to make it if they're sincere. Because I think they're the only ones that are going to be there.
There's only going to be 140 of them.
144,000.
That's going to be snatched up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what they think?
Yeah.
Something like that,
they
yeah.
They have a lot of straight truth in there.
Hmm?
They have a lot of facts or truth in their writings, however.
Sure. There's truth in all of this.
Uh-huh.
There's truth in all of this.
Yeah,
only 144,000 are going to make it?
Are in the elite, I think.
Do the draw last for that?
I don't know, Fred. They
Bill, what significance do you think this book, the significance of this book, the effect that it will have on establishing this ranch, or bettering the ranch to become implanted in
light and life?
Light.
I think it's the hope of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Urantia Brotherhood, the Urantia book, the Urantia movement represents the best efforts of all superhuman beings concerned to get an international religion started, a mankind religion. And while you find they make the greatest contact with Christianity in this religion, they do not fail to make contact with all other religions. And all of the quotations in this book are not from the Bible. You're aware of that, aren't you? They're from many other sacred, so-called sacred writings.
Has anyone checked that, Bill?
Mm-hmm.
Where they are all from?
Yeah,
I've often
I think they've all been located but one. Yeah.
What other books
are they
from, or what
are
they teaching?
Oh, the Quran, the Rig Veda, the Tao Te Ching. Sometimes they even paraphrase. I'll give you a classic paraphrase. I don't even think it's quoted. I happen to know the Tao Te Ching quite well, and I can
recognize it.
T-A-O. This is a paraphrase. If I can find it. Dear, dear. I really should read this. this book, I wouldn't fumble so much. Yes. Here is a paraphrase from some of the verses in the Tao Te Ching. Page 1157, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Paragraph 5. Mm-hmm. It has been sometimes stated, they're giving credit, that unity begets duality, that duality begets triunity, and that triunity is the eternal ancestor of all things. I think the way I've read that is unity begets oneness, begets two-ness, two-ness begets three-ness, and three-ness is the ancestor of the 10,000 things, which is a figure of speech meaning all things. Of Maran Shimoda are not necessarily all findable in writing, in my opinion. Oh dear. I got a feeling it starts in paper 2. Yeah, I think we got something here. Yeah. Page 33, last paragraph. I want to read two paragraphs. The first, as I recall, is all from the Bible. Touching the infinite, we cannot find him out. The divine footsteps are not known. His understanding is infinite, and his greatness is unsearchable. The blinding light of the Father's presence is such that, to his lowly creatures, he apparently dwells in the thick darkness. Not only are his thoughts and plans unsearchable, but he does great and marvelous things without number. God is great, we comprehend him not. Neither can the number of his years be searched out. Will God indeed dwell on the earth? Behold the heaven, and the heaven of heavens cannot contain him. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. I think every one of those quotes is from the Bible. I am equally sure that none of the following quotes are from the Bible. They're from many non-biblical sources. There is but one God, the infinite Father, who is also a faithful creator. Pretty good, isn't it? The creator is also the universal disposer, the source and destiny of souls. He is the supreme soul, the primal mind, and the unlimited spirit of all creation. The great controller makes no mistakes. He is resplendent in majesty and glory. The creator is wholly devoid of fear and enmity. He is immortal, eternal, self-existent, divine, and bountiful. How pure and beautiful, how deep and unfathomable is the supernal ancestor of all things. The expression angelic types of mind refers to the mind of a primary supernatant, the highest order of angel. You will feel something which up there is analogous to fatigue. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, Betty.
Your energy will run thin.
Yeah, we will feel strain. The first time you go to a transcendental or tea party and see silver, that's one of the primary supernatives. You see, Betty, we have the ability to comprehend, or they wouldn't let us into paradise. But it doesn't mean that we yet know. We got the brain power, but we haven't got the technique.
I thought it might mean more when it speaks of these very brilliant people, these mighty intellects.
Yes.
I thought it might mean the impact of this.
Sure. Some of these folks live on the second floor, and we're still living on the first floor.
Oh, Marvin went to the second.
The, and, you see, we do need, we are not, we don't have paradise usage at our fingertips yet. And that's pretty well explained if you look down the page. Look in the third paragraph of the next section. It says, we don't need to be taught ethics, but we do need to have what we have so laboriously learned properly interpreted to us when we are brought face to face with the extraordinary task of contacting with so much that's new. We don't need to be taught table manners. We merely need to be taught how do you apply them in this particular situation. And we don't bobble and fumble.
Protocol.
Right. Because there are primary supernafim, interpreters of ethics, who are right there and will whisper, Betty, you work inward on the forks. And we understand. Yes.
Wouldn't that be analogous to some representative or senator from the sticks going to Washington and having to know the who the seat by who?
Exactly, yes. Yeah, he needs some advice. Let's say he's a real smart guy, but he's a backwoodsman. Nothing wrong with his intelligence. And let's say he's sophisticated enough to know that it's going to be very different in Washington. He's very grateful for some advice. The point I want to make is that there is a kinship between all these ministering spirits. And that's why when we've been to our first transcendental tea party, or we've been out to dinner with some paradise citizens, it's kind of a relief to pal around with these primary supernafim because, gee, we feel at home with them. They think like angels, and we're real used to angels. So let's go back to page 285 and let's take a look at these ministering spirits. I have here a detailed cross-reference of the ministering spirits which I'm going to loan to these two gals. When they're through with them, it's going to Julia. But obviously it's silly to try to dictate this many cross-references. But I can give you a quickie on this. Let's go down the line and look at the paragraph caption where it says ministering spirits of the central universe. I would put in the margin there 26 and 27. Those are whole papers. And turn over the page. Ministering spirits of the super universes. Paper 28. And then, ministering spirits of the local universes. This is on page 286. We've been working on 285. We just turned the page. Ministering spirits of the local universes, paper 38 and 39. There is a quick, gross reference. It's on page 285 that you get the one and only full dress discussion of ministering spirits in general that's found anywhere in these papers. They're starting in with the highest order, and before they introduce the supernafim, they talk about the ministering spirits in general. There are three orders of supernafim, three orders of sakanafim, and also you have tertiafim and omnifim in the local universe, in the super universe. In the local universe, we have seraphim and cherubim. And now we get the first classification of the midway creatures. Midwayers are classified three times in these papers as ministering spirits, as permanent citizens, and as ascending sons. They fall in all three categories. Let's talk a little bit about names. We haven't talked about names in these papers. And people are going to ask you about where did they pick up these science fiction names?
That's the most common question.
All right. I can share with you my speculation. We've got a good illustration right here. In our Bible, we know about two of these orders, seraphim and cherubim. I'll never forget when I inadvertently mentioned to a Catholic priest in Masala days, Sanabim. He says, what was that? I realized that wasn't in the Bible. I think all of these names represent extensions of those root words. They elected to adopt cherubim and seraphim and to produce a series of words which were similar. So how did they do it? The top-ranking angels are superfim, supernafim. It's a little more euphonious. The next order of angels are of the second order, sakanafim. The next group are of the third order, tertiafim. These are good Latin roots. The fourth group of angels, they didn't name quatrafim. That's a little bit awkward. Instead, they derived a name from their function. They are all over fim, omniafim, and they serve all over in the service of the supreme executives. And then you get our friends, seraphim, and their subordinates, cherubim. And since a left-handed cherubim is so darn different from a right-handed cherubim, they give us a special name, sanabim. Now here is an example of an extrapolation of names given a base. Okay, let's take another one. In the book of Daniel, we know about the Ancient of Days. And evidently, that's a valid record. They really tried to show Daniel something about, for some reason or other, something about one of the triune rulers of the super universe. They made a hookup there. And they have created a whole group of functional names around this one name. This name is appropriate, ancient. There aren't any beings any older in time, are there? If you're older than an Ancient of Days, you're not a time being, you're eternal. And so, the next group higher up are called Eternals of Days. The primary group of Trinity origin beings are pretty different. They just call them Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy. It's a functional designation. These are the beings who rule the worlds on which are the secrets of supremacy. And they were Trinitized with the Paradise Trinity. But coming downward, Perfections of Days are perfect in the detailed correlation of the lower segments of the super universe. Hence their name, Perfections. The rulers of the minor sectors are of more recent creation. Hence their name, Recents of Days. The Trinity ambassadors to the courts of the Creator Sons unify the administration of the local universes with the higher Trinity administration, hence their names, Unions of Days. And the final order of these beings are extremely faithful in the service of the constellations, hence their names, Faithfuls of Days. I don't know whether this is right or wrong, but it makes sense, doesn't it? And it all stems from the fact that they're trying to use as much Bantu as they can. And in Bantu, there is a word for union of days. So we build everything around it.
Does that same thing pertain to
Urantian? No, we're coming to something yet again.
Oh.
The term bright morning star is in the Bible. I personally think that is a real screwy name.
Yeah.
I would never use that name. But in line with their principle of using all the Bantu that they can use, I see why they use it. I like the term chief executive much better. Now, if you're going to use Brighton Morning Star, then it makes sense. His principal assistant should be called Brilliant Evening Stars. This would be the opposite name.
You don't believe these names really will exist after this planetary experience?
Some will and some won't. We'll come to that. I don't think the Ancient of Days is really called that. That's a functional designation.
But there will be an association there that you'll know.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know about Seraphim. That one's up for grabs. I think certain geographic names are pretty sound because we don't have anything to go by. When we get to Urantia, Satania, Norlashadeg, yes, Betty, by gollies, I think that's exactly what they call them.
And Michael?
I think Michael, too, yes. Nebadon or Vantan. I think these are good transliterations from Satania right into English, because we have no base in Bantu. See, and as long as they're going to give us something brand new, I think they give us their name. These are odd names. They're not unmelodious. I think names like Spiranga, Spornagia, Univitatia, Susatia, Abandonders. I think these are exactly transliterations from Satania into English.
You know, the reason you use them.
Yeah.
It sounds like English syllables, though.
Sure, well, Satania translates into English.
Certainly does.
Sure. This translation you can do with some sacrifice.
What about the word Urantia?
I think that falls in the same category. That is their name for our world. And we might as well know it.
That's now, almost the first question most people
ask. Sure. Mm-hmm. Now, we are not. We've considered two types of names. One is a name based on a root that we know about, Seraphim, Ancient of Days. The second is wholly different. It's an importation. Marantia, I think, is an importation. Mm-hmm. Absinthe is an importation. Mm-hmm. And then we have functional names. Divine Counselor is a description of what he does. Perfecter of Wisdom is a description of what he does. Power Center, Master Physical Controller. These are descriptive names. For example, the local universe names fall in our first category. In the book of Genesis and in the book of Hebrews, we know about Melchizedek. And I don't know whether Veronidex and Lenonidex are called that or not, but it's easy to associate them with Melchizedek. The names sound alike, and they're closely associated in local universe administration. When we get personal names, I think it falls in category two. These are their names. Mantusha Melchizedek, Machiavellia Melchizedek, Menovendet Melchizedek are some of the personal names we know. Yes?
They must have mouth time not running out of names
up there. Sure.
Brilliant.
Now, I think also we run into, here is a fourth category. Translations. I do not believe that Adamson was ever called Adamson. If I had to make a guess as to what he was really called, I think he was probably called Adam Ben Adam. And when you translate that into English, it translates as Adam, son of Adam, which is Adamson, as Joshua Ben Joseph. Ben means son of. I think we have some translation in here. Wouldn't surprise me at all if in the English records, if there are any of the history of this world, on the mansion worlds, they speak of him as Adam Ben Adam.
Why would they use Hebrew? Isn't Ben Hebrew?
Ben goes deeper than Hebrew, I think.
Oh.
It's an older term. Ben, I think, is Semite. General Semitic for son of. I think we have some translations from one language to another. Example. The midwayers in writing part four are not stuffy. They don't insist on calling Michael Joshua. It would give offense to everybody that read the book, wouldn't they? And yet, except for a few Greeks, there isn't anyone who ever called him Jesus in his whole life. That's not an Aramaic word. It is the Greek translation of the Aramaic name Joshua. Jesus was named for a famous Jewish general. And the name Joshua translates in Greek as Jesus. And our scriptures were taken from the Greek original. But the name Jesus has separated itself from the name Joshua now, hasn't it? And we run into that. Any historian encounters that problem of names. Because some names have gotten more famous in one language than in others. Kaiser Karl der Große is known as Charlemagne to us. And if I speak of Charles the Great, it isn't quite the same as Charlemagne, is it? Theodoric the Great is known in German as Dietrich von Bern. Dietrich. You want to get real fussy in English, it's Theodore. So I speak of Theodore the Goth. And this means nothing. But if I say Theodoric the Goth, oh yeah, he was the guy that took over in Italy along about 490 A.D. Do you see the problem you've got in different languages? There's a touch of that here too. Julie, you had a question?
No, I'm just...
But this appears to be true, at least in Latin America.
Yeah, Mexico.
Yes. Has anyone been to Spain? I don't. But when you translate the butcher shop of the divinity of the Holy Ghost, I much prefer to keep it in Spanish. It sounds weird in English.
Well, there are parts of this country where that same Spanish influence pours.
I see.
The Sangre de Cristo.
Blood of Christ, yes. Yes. Wait a minute. No, you've got a touch of it. Lord Howe. Oh, my Lord, how gassed I got on this. I should never forget it. At Cappuccini Convent, I underestimated the potency of Lacrima Christi. And I had one bottle with the family and one with Chris and one by myself and sat up all night. And Lacrima Christi translated as Tears of Christ. And it's a very wonderful Italian wine. Owen, how deadly. Well, Mighty Messenger is, I don't know why they call him a Mighty Messenger. Here I give out. I don't think so, Ruth.
Messenger to the Almighty.
Well, he travels around in the super universe, and he's got a lot of authority because he's an officer of the super universe government.
Next to the fastest
traveler. No, that's a solitary messenger.
Oh, it's old.
One without name and number, they tell us, really should be given as one above name and number.
That's in the Bible.
It is?
Somewhere, without name and number.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. I didn't know that. All right, that's where we get it.
Sure it is. Yes, I know it is.
They tell us functionally this means that these folks have a grasp of the spiritual purpose of God exceeding the numbered series and the named series. One High in Authority makes sense to me. These are folks who are what they are because on the mortal ascent, by gollies, they showed they had a lot on the ball of an executive nature. They would be high in authority. Archangel, that we know about from the Bible. Life carrier, that's a functional name, like divine counselor. I'm just looking at the names of the authors. Salonia is the personal name of a seraphim. Salonia, the voice in the garden. And of course, that group of seraphim are called voices in the garden based on the account in Genesis, in the Bible. Adam and Eve heard the voice in the garden. And it was Salonia that they heard.
It's credited in the Bible as being...
messenger. Well, gee, we understand why they're solitary, because if they get too close together, they short each other out. They can't function. Nobody all of their unusual powers are kaput.
And nobody can keep up with them.
That's right.
But I'm saying they're the only ones that work alone. No,
that's right. They're very fraternal concerning other beings. They just have to stay away from their own kind if they're going to function fully. I think the discussion of nomenclature is worth taking time out for in this book. This is my theory of why they named these folks the way they did. There's a couple of them I think are a little odd. But by and large, it isn't bad. How would you name them in Bantu? How would we operate without our semantics? Bantu is so handy to refer to. These ministering spirits are just the opposite of solitary messengers. If two solitary messengers get together, they short each other out. But the ministering spirits, in one way or another, have got to work in pairs. Supernafim can work alone unless they're trying to encircle with the Father. Then it takes two of them. Sakanafim can work alone unless they're trying to encircle with either the Father circuits or the Sons. Then it takes two. And Seraphim have to be in pairs for all normal function. Isn't that intriguing?
Put the two fingers on the plug in an electric chair.
Yes. On page 286 at the bottom, you get your only really full-fledged discussion of the Supernafim. Here's something which I think you ought to do. I forgot to give you this cross-reference. Let's go back. Keep page 287 open. I knew about this and forgot about it. Let's go back to page 202, section 5, the seven spirits of the circuits. And on page 202, make a note, cross-referencing to 287, paragraph 5, and 6.
That's for the section 5?
Yeah, seven spirits of the circuits.
Mm-hmm.
I think they make a very fascinating statement here. They're discussing the circuit spirits of Avona as the collective or uniform creation of the master spirits. They partake of the nature of the infinite spirit, but were not a part of the original universe. they were in function in Havona before the times of Gran Fonda. They appeared as a creative response of the master spirits to the emerging will of the Supreme Being. And here's what I love. They were discovered in function upon the organization of the grand universe. No one knows quite when they were actually created. When they commissioned the Ancients of Days and organized the grand universe, they discovered they had these circuit spirits in Havona. And then they make a statement. The infinite spirit and all his creative associates, as universal coordinators, seem abundantly endowed with the ability to make suitable creative responses to the simultaneous developments in the experiential deities and in the evolving universes. I think of the tertiary supernafim as the supernafim of general service in Havona, in contrast to the secondary supernafim, who are specifically devoted to Havona pilgrims, both ascending and descending. Starting with section 4 on page 289, this is basically the story of the mortal ascent through Havona. That's just about what it is. And they tell it in terms of the secondary supernafim who minister, one type on each of the successive 7 Havona circuits. You'll recall on page 292, we talked about the supremacy guides, the guides on the 6th circuit, which is the closest approach you make to the Supreme Being. And while we don't find the Supreme Being, the author of this paper in the 3rd paragraph certainly believes that the Supreme Being finds us, because he says he observes a sharpening of everything about the ascending pilgrim, which makes him believe that the pilgrim is being prepared for the paradise adventure. And he thinks that the preparing agency is the invisible Supreme Being. It's interesting, too. Starting with the 4th circle, you're through with examinations. You get your last examination on the 5th circle. From here on, it's what you do in the presence of God that counts. Or how individual can this thing be at the end? This ascent starts as it begins. You begin your ascent, you determine your survival by what you do in the presence of God's Spirit, and you complete your ascent by personal performance in the presence of personal deity. That to me is appropriate. The thing starts out on the most exquisitely individual basis. It's so individual that not even Jesus could give a formula for survival. He said, number one, it is a straight and narrow way. And number two, it's plenty broad because I am that way. You're up against spiritual relativity here, aren't you? The thing starts on a very individual basis. It concludes on an equally individual basis.
That sounds terrifying, appearing before that group of 70. It sounds like appearing before a doctor's exam.
I think it's your oral exam for the PhD in the University of Eternity. From here on, it's clinical. It's an internship, you know. Paper 27 simply carries the story right on. With 26, you end with the compliments of rest and you meet the instigators of rest. You go to sleep on the inner Havana circuit, you wake up on the shores of paradise with citizenship status. You get ethics interpreted to you, you have conduct explained to you. Knowledge is made accessible to you. Philosophy is elucidated. And at the climax of your paradise career, with everything which you've got on the ball, you are consumed with a desire to express your appreciation to the Creator who made all this possible. And here again, there are meanings and values out in time and space which are not found on paradise. If everything was findable on paradise, God would never have created the universes. And if beings of paradise origin had everything obtainable in the way of understanding, then these primary supernaphim who serve as directors of worship would never underestimate the desire to worship on the part of ascending creatures. But they do underestimate because they do not know how we feel because they are not ascendant beings. They never started out as animals and slugged it out from here to there. That's quite a journey, you know. I think paper 28, the story of the Omniafim, I mean the story of the ministering spirits of the super universes, they don't say much about Tertiafim or Omniafim. We're not too concerned with them. Creator sons are concerned with Tertiafim. They're lend-lease angels in a young local universe until they get some seraphim started. Omniafim work for the supreme executives, are tied into the associate inspectors and the assigned sentinels. Primary supernaphim are not too much, primary sakanaphim are not too much concerned with us. They work pretty much for the Ancients of Days. But we are involved in the secondaries. They work for the perfecters of wisdom, divine counselors, and universal censors. What a teaching job is being done here. And how many times they point out how these beings reach inward to paradise and outward to the local universes to blend the wisdom of perfection with the experiential wisdom of evolution. What a blend that must be. They do a teaching job as well as a reflectivating job. Take the third group, the Union of Souls. They're concerned with promoting teamwork. I'm over on page 312, paragraph 2. They're concerned with promoting teamwork in ascending beings. Few are the duties in the universe for the lone servant. The higher you ascend, the more lonely you become when temporarily without the association of your fellows. We are not solitary messengers. The joy of existence. They endeavor to demonstrate that there is inherent joy in free will existence, independent of all extraneous influences. And they are right, although they meet with great difficulty in inculcating this truth in the minds of primitive men. So if any of you are a pessimist, by this yardstick, you are a primitive man.
Are they working on primitive?
Sure they are, where the reflective circuits are. We haven't got them on this world, but they would be on a normal world. Pardon?
What are the reflective circuits?
Well, let's see. I think they're missing here. Mm-hmm. Yes, at the conclusion of this paper on page 318. We are denied the full privilege of using these angels of the reflective order on Urantia. They are frequent visitors on your world, accompanying assigned personalities, but here they cannot freely function.
Because of our isolation.
Of our isolation, yes. When we get down to the tertiary Sakanafim, they're assigned to the Trinity Embraced Associates of the Superuniverse Authorities. Mighty messengers, those high in authority, those without name and number. The Trinitized Sons of Attainment. And these sections in here are to me about as interesting as anything in the book. Because the judicial function of deciding personality survival is described here. Who are you? Are you in grace? To use a conventional term. They take off a trial balance on the mercy books. Are you overdrawn? Third, did you have time to make a decision? Now that's not all these Sakanafim do. But that is their relationship to adjudication. And I think as we break it down, we can feel the fairness of adjudication. They do more than just serve the judicial system of Orvantan. For example, on page 315, paragraph 2, the significance of origins teach ascenders how to apply spirit ethics. Don't you suppose that difference of nature is at the bottom of ethics? An understanding of how a being differs from you helps you in determining your relationship to that being. And then, following such training, the memories of mercy teach them how to be truly merciful. And it's in this paragraph that the papers give their one and only full-dress definition of mercy, which I find fascinating. Spirit techniques of mercy are beyond your concept. But you should realize that there is a great reward of personal satisfaction in being first just, next fair, then patient, then kind. And then, on that foundation, if you choose and have it in your heart, you can take the next step and really show mercy. But you cannot exhibit mercy in and of itself. These steps must be traversed. Otherwise, there can be no genuine mercy. There may be patronage, condescension, or charity, even pity, but not mercy. True mercy comes only as the beautiful climax to these preceding adjuncts to group understanding, mutual appreciation, fraternal fellowship, spiritual communion, and divine harmony. I think that's just plain an exquisite expansion of the Bantu language. As you study the Sikkhanafam, you are studying your ascent in the super universe. They don't tell you about too much about minor sectors, major sectors, uversa. You have to dig it out. And always remember, the secondary and tertiary Sikkhanafam appear to have two functions. How they work for the Trinity origin and Trinity-embraced beings they're assigned to, the officers of the super-universe government, and then how they help us. Especially the tertiary Sikkhanafam. I like this import of time. They not only sit and evaluate our utilization of time in making decisions, but they teach us how to use time, and they're the secret of prophecy. They can look ahead. And number four, the solemnity of trust. You know, it's in page 316, paragraph 2, that there is a sentence which is destined to keep me permanently humble from a professional standpoint. I make my living doing this. On your rancher, you grotesquely essay to receive, to read character and to estimate specific abilities. But on Uversa, we actually do these things in perfection. The foundation of the service that I perform for business, it's not what I personally do, but it's the foundation of what I do. These papers have an adjective describing the quality of that service, and the adjective is grotesque. Every so often, my gang is the senior members of my firm are all Urantians. And every so often when we get a real, real enthusiastic letter from a business organization such as, you know, because of you we have done this, that, and the other thing, and we don't know how we could live without you. And, you know, your hat is going to be awful hard to get on. I get this sentence out and read it, and, you know, our hats are real loose, and so are our egos. That's hard to live with something like that. Sanctity of service. In the third paragraph, under the sanctity of service, they write their philosophy of progress in the universe, intake and output. You earn the right to receive by giving. And in giving, you expand your capacity to receive. Right. Well, sometimes sit down and read this paper and then go on and go into the local universe and read the paper on the ministering spirits of the local universe. And the seraphic hosts. And then dip down into part 3 and read the paper on the Destiny Guardians, how they work with us. We've covered paper 29 pretty much in our discussions of the nature of things physical. This paper points out that there are two levels of beings who work in relation to physical things. Force organizers that work on the second floor and power directors that work on the first floor. They tell you a little bit about the force organizers at the end of the paper. But in general, power directors pick up where force organizers leave off. I think we might just helpfully think about these power directors just a minute. I think of the seven supreme power directors as the material shadows of the seven master spirits. The two of them are right together on peripheral paradise, slowly circulating. I think of the supreme power centers as the stationary functioning members of this whole physical control system, whether it's the first order on the worlds of the supreme executives, the second order in the pilot worlds of Havona, the third order, I think it's the third order, you know, on the super universe capitals, the fourth order on the local universe capitals, the fifth order functioning in connection with the constellations, the sixth order not on the system capitals but functioning in the system. And why do they have a seventh order? I don't think this thing comes out quite even. I think they need utility power centers to handle odd situations where the geography of astronomy doesn't quite jibe with the administrative organization of the super universes. And so, we have a seventh order power center who's unclassified. He's available where needed. These people stand still. Their associates, the master physical controllers, move around. They're all over. The power centers and the power directors are highly volitional beings. But most of the master physical controllers are not. The master physical controllers I think of as based on the minor sectors. That's where their reserves are massed. Incidentally, that's where we study physics on the way up. And they operate throughout a given minor sector, fighting for equilibrium. As you go down the line, the associate power directors are just as personal as the power centers. But the mechanical controllers are hardly persons. The energy transformers are enough personal so that they're in charge of planetary activities in the absence of an associate power director. But from there on down, they're living machines. I don't think a power director has capacity for humor. We've already talked about the paper on personalities of the grand universe and have discussed why they give us two personality registers. I think they want to help us avoid fixating our thought and having just one interpretation for these papers. Do you recall how critical they are of what the theologians have done about the Last Supper? When they say what Jesus did was a simple, friendly gesture, an uncomplicated ceremonial, and it's been theologized almost to destruction. ever since. Everything has been interpreted. They give us two discussions of personality, I think, to show us that there's more than one way of looking at this. I'll bet you there's a Salvington register of personalities that isn't like either of these. I'll bet the seven supreme executives have a register of personalities that isn't like either the Paradise or the Aversa register. How are you going to look at things? In general, the Paradise register classifies by origin. In general, the Aversa register classifies by function. In general, the papers are written in accordance with the Aversa register and not the Paradise register. On page 333 and 334, you get into a discussion of types that are not too much discussed elsewhere in these papers. They're talking about transcendentalers, fragmented entities of deity, superpersonal beings, unclassified and unrevealed beings. The Aversa register is simple. This is the way the papers are written. I would simply make a note on page, well, you all know that the core of the finality is discussed in the next paper, when you get to the bottom of page 337. But on the top of page 338, universe aids, these are discussed in part two. And your cross-reference is, there are two cross-references. Page 369, section 4, Gabriel. And page 406, sections 1 to 7, inclusive. The courtesy colonies are pretty interesting. They don't tell us too much about them except in this following section. However, two of them are mentioned in part two.